Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
It is the Anfield Wrap on Radio City Talk. Neil Atkinson, Jay McKenna and John Gibbons. Got Sean Rogers to come to talk about the Spurs game. He's coming up after 7 o'clock. But before then, we were going to have a long chat about FSG, and we still might as we move on to that sort of thing. But the news that's broken this afternoon, Jay McKenna, is that the Sun have been banned from all Liverpool Football Club premises. That means that means Anfield and Melwood, to all intents and purposes, press conferences, covering football matches and all that sort of stuff. 28 years on.
Yeah, it's very interesting, if not surprising, news, really. I'm sure welcomed by many, many people. But does leave, I think it leaves some questions, you know, if you're naturally, you know, getting past all the things that people have naturally said of welcome it and why it's being banned and stuff like that. I'm sure we don't need to explain that. I think most people, you know, the reaction I've seen from most people, seeing Mike Galen tweeting about it before, lots of other people asking the same question of why now. Dave Prentice has wrote a piece which begins to maybe examine the idea that, you know, the newsrooms and sports teams at papers particularly then were very different, but ultimately they've reached this conclusion seemingly on the back of having conversations with I think initially and predominantly the families and people in and around Hillsborough and the campaign since, and also obviously a couple of the campaign groups that have sprung up around trying to encourage retailers to not sell it or stock it in Liverpool and beyond. So the club have clearly decided to act now, having had conversations with the directors.
Why do you think now, John Gibbons?
I think it feels quite ramped up at the moment, which is strange, really, because as we said, it's all those years on. It feels like the Don't Buy the Sun thing is actually much stronger in the city than it was 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 15 years ago. That's probably as far back as I can kind of remember really being conscious of it anyway, you know. And so it feels like in the last year it's been really ramped up. And then we were just having a chat about this in the office before we put out a show on the Anfield Wrap subscription site, and Gareth was saying sometimes it's just there's a new person in a job or a person who's been in a job for a couple of years and they just say, well, let's have a look at this. And sometimes it's just as simple as that.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
And maybe the person who was in the job then before had a different opinion for whatever reason. And they've just thought, do you know what? We've seen these groups that are around at the moment. We've seen the stuff on taxis and blah, blah, blah. Let's just have a look at it. And then they've just made a different decision to the person who was there 2 years ago. And sometimes it can just be as simple as that.
I wonder if there's an element of that, Jay, for certain, that someone's, you know, the right person's in the job who's decided to push it and pushed it through the hierarchy. That could be anywhere. It could be anywhere at the club, as far as we know, you know, above a certain level, I suspect. Also, you know, we are in an era where newspapers are weakened, where there is a lot of debate at the minute. It was a couple of days ago, Wikipedia's decided it's not going to accept the Daily Mail as a trusted source, where social media is more and more prevalent and all that sort of stuff. And where, at a time when, you know, a move like this can make the fan base in general go, well, we're glad you're doing that. We want that. We think that that's the right thing to do. That all of a sudden, maybe in amongst all of these balances, the weights, the scales have just shifted. It doesn't take much, as John says, the right word at the right time from the right person who may have just decided to speak up, or maybe new into a position, just sort of comes in and just tilts the scale in one little direction, and suddenly the decision's different.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. It's the environment now that has presented itself for this to happen, whether that be, I think, a change of personnel or Liverpool maybe, or somebody, you know, it's been in a to-do, you know, pile that we've all probably got on our desks, and someone's decided to take some action on it. Whether, you know, circumstances maybe change with the Premier League or the contracts that have been signed around media, you know, and providing access to journalists and who provides that accreditation, Liverpool, you know, have got some control on it. You know, there could have been any one number of things. I think John's right, though, that it has seemingly ramped up. And I think also, in part, you know, I had this with David Wooden on a friend's, mutual friend's Facebook, about a comment he'd made around the boycott and almost mocking it. And it's like, I almost think whether, you know, Liverpool have thought, well, you know what, we need to act, because they seemingly think they can act without impunity. They think they can, you know, that this has all just been done and forgotten now, and the sun's, you know, fine, or we're not as angry about it because we've had the inquest and we've had the verdicts, and, you know, files are being passed to the CPS for potential criminal prosecutions against police. Maybe it was a case of saying, no, we just want to remind you that we are still firmly opposed to your newspaper and what it's done, and you're failing to act since. So I think, despite all the questions of why now, you know, it will be welcomed by people, the kind of thing Liverpool probably should have done at the time, but, you know, have ultimately acted. It will be very telling, I think, to see the reaction. I know this won't matter to Liverpool supporters much, but I'll be very interested to see the reaction from other newspapers and journalists to this news. What kind of common pieces you get written about it, and similarly, you know, the kind of reaction it might get from the Sun itself.
Well, the Sun have brought out a statement, and one of the things they say is it's bad news, pardon the pun, for football clubs to be banning newspapers, and they've kind of made a point on that. And obviously, this is a very specific situation, but yeah, I wonder, as you said, that will people stick up for them and say, will football clubs start making excuses to get rid of certain reporters they don't like and things like that? I mean, and we're getting into an age now where, I mean, this is a very separate thing, but where football clubs, you know, they've got their own media now and things like that. And I know at Liverpool, they're trying to do more and more on the TV channel through the websites and things like that. So, you know, whether we get to a stage where, you know, and football managers, a lot of them don't like press conferences, whether, you know, we get closer to a stage where they're just done away with kind of and everything comes through official channels. I don't know. I think that would be a shame. But I think it'd be interesting to see, you know, what we actually get from the Sun now as well in terms of to Liverpool. They've put a statement out at the end. It tries to be conciliatory, but, you know, we've all seen in the past, you know, what happens when you cross the Sun. They normally come out swinging, and there's normally a horrible story about you a week or two later. They've already done the stuff with Lovren, you know, and things like that. And I wonder how much that's got to do with it.
Yeah,
as well.
I mean, there's a vindictiveness to it, and yeah. I love the and a new generation of journalists on the paper. Well, as far as I'm concerned, the paper was badly snide before the 15th of April 1989, and it's anything I've ever seen.
It's badly snide since,
not just to Liverpool, but in general.
Yeah, so that's why I really like Stan Collymore's tweet, and actually retweeted it from the Anfield Wrap website, because it basically said this is great and listed all the people that the Sun hate, and it's not just us.
And I think that's a key thing, and I think the new generation of journalists thing as well, Jay. There's some wants to go down the route of saying a new generation of journalists, it's still paying money out to Kelvin McKenzie. He's still got a column there.
Exactly, yeah. You know, he's not
a new generation of journalists.
No, they can talk about what they want and haven't forgotten it, but go and do what, you know, I tweeted about it before. I said, you know, they should have just done what Kenny said. They ran Kenny, you read Kenny Dalglish's autobiography, and it says he gets a phone call from someone at the Sun, I can't remember who it was, it might have been the editor at the time, or the editor Post McKenzie or someone, and he said, you know, what can we do to fix this? And Kenny said, you know, that big headline you printed saying the truth. And he says, yeah, he said, put one saying we lied. And they haven't. No matter what they've done, there's been soft apologies, we didn't know.
Deep regrets.
Yeah, people lied to us and stuff like that, you know. Kelvin McKenzie's openly mocked things since, despite trying to claim that he'd
been misfed. Saying if he became a Lord, he'd want to be
Lord. Lord McKenzie of Anfield and all stuff like this. He's rubbing people's noses, isn't he? Because he gets away with it. And because they'll keep paying him, because, you know, we're not their audience, and Liverpool should have just said to, you know, and they have now, should have said, well, you know, we just want no part. We're not going to make your job easier. You know, you can sell your newspaper, you can peddle your lies, you can peddle your myths, you can peddle your ideology on people if you want. We're just not going to make it easier for you. You know, we always had this with SOS, and I'm sure, you know, it's the same with the Anfield Wrap. We'd get phone calls sometimes. We'd obviously never get them directly from some journalists, but, you know, even the agencies and the freelancers, they'd ring us and they'd say,
can we have a quote?
You know, can we have a quote? And you'd say, well, where are you from? Oh, we're from an agency. And a lot of the lads, and it was predominantly lads, you know, they'd be opening up for me and say, you know, I'm just going to say to you, mate, some of the work I pass on, you know, one of the big clients is the Sun. And I'd just say, well, I'm sorry, mate, I'm not going to give it to you. You know, you can pick my quote up another time, absolutely. You'll pick it up from a post online, it can be in your paper the next day, that's fine if you want to do that, but I'm just not going to make the job easier for you. And I think that's the thing most people probably would have liked to have seen, of not allowing them into the press conferences and, you know, into Melwood. You know, don't make their job easier for them. They haven't earned it from us. You know, I think there's a thing about freedom of the press, and I absolutely support that, and no censorship, but, you know, ultimately, they've damaged this football club and spoken ill of them. You know,
and the city,
and of the city and of its people. And you wouldn't, you know, I wouldn't pick the phone up to them if they'd said something bad about me. You know, I wouldn't pick the phone up or deal with a journalist or deal with an organisation who spoke bad about me and people who I cared about. So, you know, I think the football club should be no different. And I'm sure most people, you know, probably listening to this now will be, you know, welcoming the news.
It is the Anfield Wrap on Radio City Talk. We'll be there until 7:30. After this, I think we might have a chat about FSG. It's David Bowie, Golden Years, Neil Atkinson, Jay McKenna, John Gibbons with you until 7:30. Sean Rogers to come after the news, talking about the way in which Spurs will approach Liverpool and the way in which Liverpool could approach Spurs. Before then, there was two things sort of happened simultaneously. There was the release of some documents this week. Some documents have also been knocking around for a while. And also, there's Liverpool are in a bad run of form. And one of the things that happens when Liverpool are in a bad run of form, John Gibbons, is people look for someone to blame. And often when people are looking for someone to blame, the gaze goes back towards Liverpool's owners, towards FSG. And it's this situation, really, where the ownership at times, it can feel like that's a little bit unfair. Like, for instance, they're not responsible for Liverpool being absolutely dreadful at Hull and all that sort of stuff. But there is, simultaneously, the reality that since FSG have been in, Liverpool have only won one trophy and only finished top four once. And there's all these contradictions right the way through the entire FSG question, really, as to whether or not they're the best possible owners that Liverpool could have, the worst possible owners, or somewhere in between.
Yeah, I think you're right. So these things do happen when the team aren't playing well, and whether anyone had bothered to go through all these court documents or release them, or whether anyone would have read them if we were still winning, you know, is up for discussion. The fact is we're not winning games of football, and I think it's all well and good. I understand what you're saying. The you know, it's not their fault we lose a Hull necessarily, but they have to take some responsibility. And I think a lot of Liverpool fans are feeling like we're seeing the same season over and over again, where there's inconsistencies, there's bits of promise followed by kind of poor results and a little bit of lack of resilience, really. And they've made certain decisions since they've been at this football club, be it to focus on a certain type of footballer, be it to spend a certain amount of money and not go above it. And I think a lot of Liverpool fans feel like we're seeing the same season, and unless all the stars align, like they almost did in 13-14, that Liverpool aren't gonna win major trophies. And I think it's just getting frustrating for a lot of Liverpool fans, and they're looking at it and saying, well, what's the common denominator? You know, in the last 7 years, you know, there's been different managers, we've tried different things, we've had club legends, we've had young managers, we've had, you know, the one of the hottest coaches in world football, this charismatic guy, and countless players. You know, I saw a stat which is amazing, that you know, since of all the signings under the FSG, you know, we've actually sold more than we've still got, which is you know, crazy, really. And so,
is,
you know,
it?
Yeah.
Do you think it's crazy?
I think it's. I was surprised. I was surprised by that. I think if you're going to buy young players and develop them, and that's your model, I'd expect a lot of them to still be at the club.
Would you not? Is there not? I mean, it's almost becomes a blind alley, so I don't want to dwell on it. But if you're going to buy young players, take a gamble on young players, do you not think that there's realistically a chance that one of the things you need to be good at is cutting your losses and saying, well, he hasn't worked, this hasn't worked, let's shift this on quickly, let's make it a bit different?
Yeah, quite possibly. But I just remember looking at it and thinking, well, it felt quite damning to me. And there's different ways to look at all statistics, of course, but, you know, the statistic that is hard to argue with is the ones that you read out, which is the trophies and which is the league finishes, and it just hasn't kind of been good enough. And to me, Jürgen Klopp always felt like the last roll of the dice for FSG. Always felt like the one where it was going to be, well, if we can't win with this fella, then we're probably going to not. I'm not writing off winning with Jürgen Klopp because he's not. And as long as Jürgen Klopp believes he can win with Liverpool, well, I'll stick with him because, you know, maybe I'm mad, but, you know, I'll stick with him. But I think if it doesn't happen, and I think if we're in this situation, say, the same time next year, and we're already out of a title race, then, you know, FSG will have to start asking questions of themselves, and I think they probably will. They'll start going, you know, we thought we couldn't come in. And that was the thing that annoyed me most about those emails. It wasn't the, oh, we're getting a steal. It wasn't the franchise stuff. It was them saying that it's not exactly the smartest and brightest who are working in football. And that's always been the suspicion of them, is that they just thought they were going to come in and be smarter than everyone else. And, well, it hasn't worked.
Well, this is, I'd agree with John there, Jay. I think that's become, for me, in general, has just been the biggest frustration, is this idea that football was ready to be plucked in some sort of way, that football was ripe for something, ripe for the smart kids to come in and show how smart they are, whereas the reality is that you can think you're employing the smart kids. Well, Real Madrid think they're employing the smart kids, Barcelona think they're employing the smart kids, Chelsea think they're employing the smart kids, Man City do. Everybody thinks they're employing the smart kids because guess what? They are.
Yeah, well, it's like, I always say this about FFP, and it's a link, obviously, into, because FSG have always talked about this financial fair play. And I remember going to a presentation UEFA done talking about how great it was going to be. And they said, we asked a question about how clubs were going to get round it. This was just before it was to be introduced. And UEFA were like adamant clubs couldn't come round it because they'd had it checked by all these lawyers. And I was thinking, yeah, mate, but for every lawyer you buy, Man City and Chelsea have just bought 10 better.
Yeah.
Just bought 10 better.
Chelsea have just bought loads and loads of players at different prices and have just got an ongoing circulation of them going out on loan and then selling them on. Why? Because it means that they've got carte blanche under FFP to do what they want. Yeah. And Man City have done loads and loads and loads, to be fair to them, loads and loads of fixed investments in the football club and in the area, which offsets against FFP. Why? Because they've got the money and these fellas, they're not stupid. They can go and find their own clever men.
Yeah, absolutely not. I think you're right about...
I mean, FFP is a real thing. Liverpool could be punished.
Actually, yeah, it's real. It is real. You know, I think... It hasn't worked out people intended and maybe how FSC intended. And I think this is one of the problems, and I'll come on to it, what John's just said there, which I absolutely agree with, is that but Liverpool were so wedded to this idea of FFP and how it was going to work and how they expected it to work, that when it hasn't worked quite like how they thought and intended, and Arsenal had this, and I remember Arsene Wenger saying similar things at the time as well, they're not quite sure how to react, and Liverpool have been wedded to this model. Which I think is one of the valid criticisms of FSC is they haven't seemed to have been able to change or bend. You know, we're still in this idea of buying unappreciated, underdeveloped talent. You know, we can get this lad from, you know, Hoffenheim and no one quite realises how good he is and we'll bring him over here and he's Roberto Firmino and everyone will know how he is. Lots of other clubs are looking to do that. They're just not having to take the same risk we're doing, and you know, we are taking risks on some players and it doesn't work out. I think you're right. We do recognise that we need to cut our losses. We're just not very good at cutting our losses and getting some of the decent amount of money back that we've spent, which is problematic at times. You know, we sign these players and we keep recycling, doing the same thing year after year. I absolutely agree with John. I think Jurgen Klopp is their last chance to prove that their model works in football. And if their model doesn't work, they need to think of something else. Because he does fit. I don't buy this idea that Jurgen Klopp is somehow fronting it up for the managers. I think he's got, you know...
He's got what he thinks and he's saying what he thinks.
He thinks these things, so I think they're a good fit as opposed to him saying what his bosses want him to wear, no matter how much money he's on.
Just on that quickly, Jay, it's worth pointing out, isn't it, that I think you and I have had this conversation before. The manager was given every chance to back the club around the time of the walkout last season, to explicitly say people shouldn't do this, and he very, very clearly
didn't. And neither did Pep Linders, who'd done the interview after the game. Pep Linders didn't say it was great. Pep Linders said the fans walking out didn't have no impact. You know, if that was the fella who was in charge, who goes without name here, you know, when FSG first took over, he'd have been blaming us. You know, it wasn't there. And similarly, I think Jurgen Klopp's got too much of a reputation to risk on getting into bed with owners who aren't good for a football club or aren't quite giving him the best opportunity to develop. Because if Klopp can't do it here, obviously he'll get another job somewhere else. But then if he struggles there, it'll be a case of, well, hang on, has Jurgen Klopp flopped? He's not going to let it be on his head for something that other people have done. Jurgen Klopp's in demand. If he said to Liverpool now, well, you're not backing me in a transfer market, I'm off. Someone will take Jurgen Klopp. Someone will take him and give him money and let him do things. So, you know, I think he's got too much to risk by doing that. I don't actually think he is. I do think, you know, it prompts a big thing. Gareth Roberts wrote a good piece on your site this week about it. It probably fits with where I'm at. I can see both sides, and you know, maybe people might think I would because of my involvement with Spirit of Shankly, but, you know, I can see both sides to this. I can see why people are asking questions. I think it's right that we ask questions. We've been through a lot to not ask them. But I don't think it automatically jumps to the other end of that. They're the worst people in the world. You know, they have improved a lot of the things we wanted to see improved under Moores and Paddy, let alone under Hicks and Gillette. You know, the commercial development of the club, you know, we haven't caught up to Manchester United. We've caught up to where Manchester United were maybe when we should have been, you know, when the original American owners first took charge. But I do think there's been a problem, you know, of them actually beginning to understand football in this country and the football club and why it is the way it is and, well, you know, actually trying to see if there's a different way than what their model was. And one example I'll just give is when they took charge the Friday, we played Everton the Sunday and we had meetings with them on the Monday. And they were even saying then, and I think this is why I don't buy into what their emails say too much, you know, these are investors pre-purchasing the club, saying, you know, things in private. I've probably said things in private ahead of taking a job that I subsequently love about whether I've got questions about it. I'll probably still say them now. You know, people do talk to people in private about these things. You know, they haven't said nothing bad. It was a steal. They didn't save us. They were investors who were getting an absolute bargain. The second they signed on the dotted line, it was worth more. But all of the considerations they made in signing the club, when they literally took charge, they will have spent the weekend looking at the books, and they were saying to us in the meeting, we literally keep on turning over the page in a book or lifting something up and finding something and thinking, oh, let's put that back down. You know, when they talked about players' contracts that had been signed, they asked questions about certain ones of them, and they were raising points. And, you know, they didn't go into detail, but they were clearly slightly disturbed by what they'd found. And I think they had, you know, and I know Gareth touched on his article, he talked about Liverpool's performances in the league. Some of that, you know, I think now we can begin to ask, you know, FSG, the last couple of seasons, what their strategy is and direction is. But some of that early doors, they were literally fighting fires. They were literally still putting out fires that were burning from Hicks and Gillette. You know, the stadium write-off fees. They walked into a Roy Hodgson thinking, well, you know, and I know for a fact they were trying to think to themselves at the time, can we get through the rest of the season without sacking him? Because there was no one readily available in the January to take over. It was becoming it became untenable around that time. They appointed it to Dalglish because he was the only one available for them to take a short-term job. And then Dalglish had a fantastic season, and now just sack a club legend when you're just these new guys in town, 6 months old. What do you do? So then they give Dalglish another year. They didn't feel it was working out clearly early on in that year, but then Liverpool got to a final and won a cup. And then the fans are thinking, well, hang on, he's a club legend, maybe we give him a chance. And then they didn't. They appointed a young manager. And, you know, I think that was where we began to see what FSG were trying to instill on the club. But, you know, some bits of their fault, and I think they are literally middle-of-the-road owners at the minute. They've got areas to improve on, but they're not this... You know, I have big, significant questions and concerns about some things they've done, but they're not these big bad owners. They're nowhere near comparable to the Hicks and Gillettes.
Very, very quickly, John, before we go to the news, what Jay sort of half touched on one of the issues there as well, when you talk about them getting the club under the fingernails and all that sort of stuff. There remains, personally, an issue for me in terms of the fact that Billy Hogan does one day a week in Liverpool. It's one day a month, sorry, in Liverpool, that FSG themselves have not got a proper Liverpool presence. They might argue with that. They might mention a couple of people. But what I mean is sort of feeling the beat of the city, because this is a city that beats to the rhythm of the city is the football team, and understanding all of that, I think, is actually more complex than people give it credit for.
Yeah, I was going to say that. That's what I was going to jump in on. You know, the kind of side issues to all this is it really helped them if people felt like they cared more. And it's a really easy thing to do, and I don't get it. You know, I don't get why we, you know, there's so many kind of faceless, voiceless people involved in Liverpool, Liverpool Football Club, and why, you know, the only time I've heard from Billy Hogan in the last 2 years is this interview with FC Business, which is just like just an awful word in itself. You know, if they just came to Anfield more, if they just, you know, little things, it's not difficult stuff, you know what I mean? If they were just around more, if they spoke to supporters group, even if you largely ignored them, I think people would say, well, fair enough, they're having a go. Come on the Anfield rap if you want, you know what I mean, and disagree with everything I've got to say, because I'll say some rubbish. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, and it's fine, but like, you know, just it's not difficult. And this isn't just John Henry we're talking about, it's Mike Gordon, it's other people, it's people they've employed as well. Like, you know,
Mike Edwards.
Yeah, exactly. Apart from the football manager, I'd say the top five or six positions in Liverpool Football Club, like, you know, you struggle to pick a lot of them out on a lineup.
Here's an example, though, just to touch on that. Dead quick, the worst. Jürgen Klopp signed a new contract, 6-year extension. Massive news for Liverpool, tying a manager down that long, and Jürgen Klopp was doing the press on it. It's astonishing.
Okay, this is the Anfield Wrap on Radio City Talk, 6:30. And if you're listening, you want to come and grab a seat, anyone there from the football club, 6:30 Fridays, is the news. This is the Anfield Wrap on Radio City Talk. Back to everybody else in a minute or two. But as a new little feature, what we're trying to do is look ahead to the weekend's game with Sean Rogers, who does our review show with us, looking back at the games every single weekend, how Liverpool have performed, what we expected to happen, the side we expected the manager to pick, what we expected from the opposition, crucially first and foremost, and seeing whether or not we get that and how Liverpool deal with it. And that's what we talk about on our Tuesday review show. It tends to come out on a Tuesday, but we thought we'd preempt a little bit this week with Spurs being a big game. Sean, have a look at doing it this way for once. And the question is if the Spurs manager, Pellegrino, can do what the sides who've been frustrating Liverpool have been doing, or does he have to say to his lads, listen, we play our way, we do our natural game, we're not just going to sit in? That's the key question for me, because it's easy for us to say, well, we can all see the blueprint as to how to get results against Liverpool, but it's hard for a manager to say to his lads, don't go toe-to-toe with these, sit in instead, be conservative.
Yeah, it's really interesting, isn't it? You know, he's had a number of games this season, especially at home, but he's had a couple of away games as well. If you look at, you know, Chelsea and City, irrespective of the result in those games, I thought Tottenham played very well. and everyone will always reference it. They're kind of like half a Rafa Benitez side, half Jurgen Klopp side, aren't they, in the way that they play? And it's a difficult one. You expect them to come and play in that exact same similar manner. Something that is interesting and a bit of a curveball is that he did change for Chelsea, and he did decide to line up in a slightly different manner. It'll be interesting to see whether he therefore adopts the tactics that we've seen recently, where people, you know, look to sit deep, defend very narrow, let Liverpool have the ball and bring them onto us. It's not been the way they've been playing at Anfield, and it's not normally the way that they play. And if it hadn't been for the Chelsea game, I'd be pretty confident they'd just come and play the normal way. But the fact that he did that against Chelsea shows that he's willing to adapt, and B, because it worked, it gives you that bit more confidence to do so again.
Is it not going to be in his head, though, I'm not saying they would... You can't tell what they were doing against City, because City ran amok for an hour. So were they trying to pull City onto them and think, oh, we'll spring here? But, you know, were they trying to do that, or was that just simply how the game played out? Without obviously asking the manager himself, and why would he tell us? He can't work out quite what happened there, but City really should have been out of sight. So it might be that there they were thinking, well, we'll do that, but Liverpool can play. Whilst they haven't got necessarily a Kevin De Bruyne as an example, but they have got tons and tons of quality. Liverpool could play that way and make their life very difficult for them.
No, they could. I mean, I think Tottenham, when they're away from home, especially in the big games, they always have a... And people say everyone has a bit of a spell, and that's not true. They don't always have a spell. And they might have a bit of ball, but certainly when Tottenham come to Anfield, they don't play for 94 minutes. Absolutely exceptional. When Tottenham have come to Anfield over the last few years, we've seen them have a real good 20 when Dembele looks like an absolute top draw player, where, you know, Eriksen's movement's working well, where Kane suddenly starts getting involved in the game. And it's a bit of a seesaw, really. You know, it's a bit like a proper punch up, you know, swings both ways. And I think the interesting thing for him is whether you keep it, you know, with City, you can say, well, yeah, they had their spell, but then we had ours, and even on maybe not so good a day, we still showed lots of quality and resilience. And I think it's a very interesting one for him. It's a difficult one for him. I think it's a much easier one for Jurgen Klopp. It's funny, I mean, we were discussing the other week, I think how Jurgen sets up for Leicester is so much more difficult in every single way, in the days leading up, the man management, than it is for Tottenham. I think this is quite an easy game for Jurgen Klopp to prepare for. I think with Pochettino, what would you do out of interest? It's interesting. Would you go, do you know what? We play this way, we've had a lot of success with it, we're on a roll, why change? Or do you go, do you know what, teams are having success with Liverpool and have changed in the recent history to success?
I think if you're Pochettino, you think we want a big first 20, and then maybe, boys, maybe we fall back last 20 of the first half. We have the idea that we've got the... firstly, I want you to be yourselves, I want you to play your way. Secondly, this is a side that's lacking in confidence. We don't quite know what the crowd's going to do. Let's get on. Let's look to impose ourselves and see what happens. But don't be surprised if, as you've mentioned in the past in training, where Mourinho holds a certain colour card up saying that we're changing to this. Don't be surprised if, you know, if it is 0-0, or if Liverpool have even managed to snatch one on the break, they have the mentality of, right, let's just get the half. We get to 45. Maybe we get a set piece. Maybe we get a breakaway. But we then not play dead, overstate it, but we go a little deeper. We draw them on and see if we can hit them on the break. And it wouldn't surprise me if they almost do the two approaches across one half, split in the middle.
Yeah, my view is that whatever he does in the first 20 isn't going to be what he wants to do for the entire game. Obviously, scoreline dependent. If he comes out first 20, one and a big first 20, and we go 1-0 up, he hasn't got much of a choice. You know, they've got to come out and play. But I think he'll either come out first 20, like you say, and go, do you know what? Don't let them get the tails up. Don't let Anfield be bouncing. Let's get at these whilst they're down, potentially. And then at that point, maybe drop off and sit off and go, okay, well, at least until half time, when we can reassess what we do. Alternatively, you may say, do you know what? Take the sting out of this. Time waste. Sit deep. Let them have the ball. Let a bit of frustration creep in. And then when we start playing our way in, we look to kill them, you know, 30 to 45, if you like, and go in with a lead. He may even extend that to the first half, actually, to half time. But I think whatever you see in the first 20 from Tottenham isn't what you're going to see, certainly for the remainder of the half, maybe even across the game, depending on the score.
The other thing to point out is and the more time you spend looking at Spurs this season, I mean, it's interesting that they've almost had an inverse season to Liverpool. They're the side who feel as though they've got momentum at this sort of point. But a lot of that is, you know, we're talking on and off about questions around the Liverpool squad. they are more than any other side, really, I can think of in the country. I mean, Chelsea have had one game without Costa and they went and won it, so, but maybe you can say Chelsea as well, but they're completely defined by what their number nine does, albeit the fact that he wears number 10. He's so important. He's so important to them, isn't he, Sean? And he's able to just to carry that constant threat, the physicality, the work rate, without having a ton of pace. That's why he's interesting. He hasn't got a ton of pace, but he's quick enough to be difficult when he's on the ball. He's difficult to get off it. You can't beat him, but he's quick enough so that you can't quite get round him. I mean, Kane is the player who's responsible who's the most responsible for how well his side plays in the Premier League at the moment.
Yeah, it's a bit mad. I don't think he's not at his level, but if you were to look at, say, Alan Shearer, it's hard to say, name me an attribute, other than just scoring goals, as an example. Like, what attribute has he got which you go, he's unbelievable at?
Yeah.
Whatever. You know, he's pretty one-footed, not lightning fast, not very skillful, not got an amazing touch. It's good enough to play for a top six side with the size and the kind of player that he is.
He's not phenomenal in the air. But he's pretty good in the air, but he's not phenomenal in the air.
He's not going to drop in and link the play and do things. He's not going to pop up like, say, you know, we've seen a Wayne Rooney or a Suarez in the past popping up in midfield and winning balls back for you. He does work hard. He's kind of, you'd imagine if it was like Championship Manager or some kind of rating system, there's loads of sevens and eights flying around, maybe a little bit higher. He's just incredibly effective. And I think he's got that little bit of Kevin Keegan about him, that his work rate and his desire to improve and just make the very best of what he can be. We maybe underestimate that. It's easier said than done year on year. And I'd still think that the bar gets increased year on year, or certainly over periods. And it's interesting that Harry Kane's been able to continue with that. With Tottenham as a whole, it's interesting. Did Harry Kane get Tottenham kickstarted, or did other things happen? You know, Eriksen started to show a bit of form now. I think his influence over the last few weeks has started to get bigger and bigger in the final third, and he's just starting to click into... He doesn't score enough. He doesn't score anywhere near as many as he should, Eriksen, and that's probably the biggest weakness in his game. But certainly in terms of his creativity, he's starting to gel. Wanyama, you know, we always think of him just as a purely defensive role, you know, and someone who can, you know, cover the back four, protect and assist without the ball. He's building a lot of play. You know, he's linking a lot of play. I think even myself, when he was at Southampton, I wasn't... people say join Liverpool, I just wasn't sure he'd be good enough on the ball. I wasn't sure his mobility on the ball, his movement would be good enough. I think with Tottenham, he's underestimated. I don't think you can just let him have the ball, because I think the danger is Eriksen. Maybe not Kane as such, but certainly Eriksen and Son, who I would expect both to play unless something comes up with illness or injury. It's a threat. And I think... not to the same extent, but it's about how do you stop Gerrard and Torres? Will you stop them getting the ball? You know, how do you stop Harry Kane and Eriksen? You limit them getting the ball. So I think it's important with Dembele and Wanyama, we get in and around them and stop that supply.
It's a double pivot that they use there. The Liverpool manager has made noises about making significant changes, but as you say, that would be easier if these fixtures were flipped the other way around. 100%. If it was Leicester first and then Spurs, because one of the things that is dressing room can look at him and go, well, hang on, Gaffer, in these games against these sides, you can look at us and say that we've done really, really well. So the idea that, you know, he as an example, he says, you know what, I'm frustrated with the performance that's been put in by two of me front three. We're going Sturridge and Origi. Well, that'd feel like a huge move in the context of this game.
Yeah, and it would be as well. Yeah, it would feel it, and it would be. I wonder whether he'll come to a hybrid where there's a couple of things he could do which would be relatively easy wins if that's what he wants to do. Because it's not just about what he does to succeed against Tottenham. I think there's possibly a side of Jürgen that's going, I really want to make the players aware that I wasn't just angry on Saturday and then I'm...
there are consequences.
There are consequences. So you'd assume he may change the goalkeeper. That'd be an easy one. He's got an obvious one, depending on Lovren's injury, depending on Clavin's health. He can certainly get Lucas out of there one way or another.
He can possibly look at either fullback.
I was just about to say, he's got an option to put Moreno in and move one of the fullbacks around, whether that be Milner or Klein. He's got an easy one with Wijnaldum and Chan.
He's got Alexander-Arnold, who's impressed on under-23s, if he wanted to just do Alexander-Arnold in for Klein and say, that's that.
Yeah, and he could. And that would feel a really big move, I think, as well, because he's seen as the deputy, not as someone who's at level two people competing for one shirt, like he might say a bit with Moreno and Milner, he might say certainly with the keepers.
Or Chan and Van Aldem.
Or Chan and Van Aldem, yeah. Now, it's weird because you look at Chan's performance against Chelsea and his performance against Manchester United, and you kind of like, I might want to keep them. But if he does want to change things up, I think he can make a few changes and draw a bit of a line under Hull and maybe more of a squad punishment and saying, look, I'm sorry, this is changing. You don't get to play again as a unit after that. He could do it in that way. I think if he went any further than that, it would surprise me. That would seem a bit drastic because, as you say, the world and his wife knows that we are generally, without tempting fate, really good in these games. We've got a good record in these games. Everyone knows we've got a good record in these games.
And it'd be strange for us all to be sitting around saying, can't wait till we get the front four back, can't wait till we get the front four back, that if the first time the front four don't work all season, when the record up to this point has been terrific, to then go, well, they were that bad, I've got to bomb one of them out.
And it'd be even stranger to know on New Year's Day that you've got no Coutinho, no Henderson, no Mane, that you've had Lallana coming back from an injury, you've got no Matip, and you're still going to play the same way, you're still going to play the same system, you're still going to try and play in the same manner. And I think to do that through the month of January and then be in a situation whereby you change when every one of those players are back who were so good from August to November would, to me, seem a bit crackers. If you were going to change it, the time to do it is either on News Day to go, look, I've set up this 4-3-3. I'm missing too many of the components. Is this going to work? Yeah. Does this work? Or in the middle of January to go, I've given it 2 weeks, but without all of these lads, not just here, but in form, it's not working. I'm going to change it now. To change it, it's a bit like the horse has already bolted if he changes it now for me.
Well, to do the other side of United, where he did set up a different way for an hour, he could then have carried that into the next game and the game after and gone, right, we've done this, but he hasn't. Yeah. He's gone back. He went back for the Southampton game and he went back for the Swansea game.
100%. And I think unless something dramatically changes for this next run of fixtures, I think his priority isn't going to be wildly changing the tactics or his method of play. I think certainly he's going to rely on this front four. How do I get this front four? Now, we might see little things that he tweaks. We might see the front three play a bit wider. We might see a couple of little tactical changes in relation to maybe the fullbacks or the shape of his midfield even. You know, he might do a two and a one rather than a one and a two. I think we might see a couple of little tweaks. We might even see, which is something we've been talking about on the other shows, you know, will we maybe play a bit deeper ourselves? Will we maybe try and have, it sounds a bit contradictory to say, but will we try and have less of the ball? You know, will we try and let the opposition have a bit of the ball? There's little things I think could do, but I think broadly speaking, he's going to be saying, lads, let's get back to doing what we're doing at the start of the season. You're all the same players. Form's temporary, class is permanent. Let's get back to doing what we do well.
Huge thank you to Sean. Going to get back over to everybody else in a minute. Going to play a song before then. But before all of that, this is the Anfield Wrap on Radio City Talk. We do our subscription service. We'll be talking to Sean about the game, the last word on Spurs versus Liverpool, or Liverpool versus Spurs more accurately. Me, Sean, and I think it'll probably be Paul Cope next week. You'll be able to listen to that one. Not quite booked it yet, but I'll sort it out. But you can do it for that sort of thing. It's £5 a month through our subscription service. TheAnfieldWrap.com/subscribe. This is the Anfield Wrap on Radio City Talk, and this is I Won't Back Down, Tom Petty. That's I Won't Back Down by Tom Petty. Interesting stuff from Sean there. And he recorded that before the press conference today that Jurgen Klopp gave before the Spurs game, John Gibbons. And the manager was at pains not to give a great deal away, really, at the press conference today. He's made noises early in the week about making some significant changes. We've still not really got much of a flavour as to what they think they might be.
Yeah, for a good talker, he very rarely gives much away. You know, he wasn't being drawn on the goalkeeping thing, which I think is quite a big decision for him. You know, there was rumours, I think David Maddock it was, who put it in the Daily Mirror, that as far as he's concerned, we're going to see a different goalkeeper this weekend to the one we've seen in the past few weeks. He was making no comments on that and at all, and, you know, suggested he hasn't decided yet. I'm sure he has, but, you know, why give anything away, I guess? And, you know, he was... What he was cleared on is, you know, there might be changes of personnel, but he's not suddenly going to stop believing in what he believes in. You know, there's not suddenly going to be this idea of, oh, we're going to play, you know, a big man up front and go to him, or you know, or kind of change what Liverpool are about. He believes that we can go 14 games unbeaten to the end of the season. He said that, and he believes things can change quickly. He kept saying this, you know, someone pointed out the Tottenham were 1 win in 10 at one point earlier in the season, and then now they're seen as the, you know, the that one of the best teams in the league, well, they are one of the best teams in the league. And so, you know, he was right. He was putting these things out. I thought he was quite chipper, actually, in the press conference. As I say, we've just done a show on it. And, you know, he seemed like, you know, he was glad of the little break. But, you know, he's saying they've been good in training, doing a lot of tactical stuff and just reinforcing kind of what they're good at. And I think what we're going to see from Liverpool, you know, it'll be a 4-3-3. It'll be similar to kind of what we play. We're just hoping it's going to be a lot better.
Well, but it's going to be a lot better. I think it is going to be. I think for all the talk, Jay, of there being significant changes, I actually think the changes that there will be, there may be three or four of them, but I don't think they'll be significant to the footballers involved who go to and play. But I don't think they're going to necessarily be that significant. It wouldn't surprise me if he changed the goalkeeper, if he has a look at changing one of the fullbacks, if someone comes in at centre-half who isn't Lucas, Lovren, if he's fit, and then maybe changes one midfield place and then is able to say, well, there you are, that's four changes.
Yeah, and I think of any of the changes, the story is going to be the keeper. You know, if he does change the keeper, as has been suggested, that then I think that's it for Simon Mignolet, isn't it, at Liverpool? You know, he signed Karius, he gave Karius a game early on, he dropped Karius to bring Mignolet back in, and he's probably going to think to himself now, if he is changing him, that, you know, that Simon Mignolet just can't change, he just is that keeper, and he'll move him on. So I think that'll be quite a decisive decision to make, because there is no going back from that. He can't really... You know, I wouldn't quite like to be trying to rely on him in four games' time if he says, oh, by the way, lad, we're going to bring you back in now, no matter how professional he is. No, I think Liverpool need to make some changes to freshen it up. We look tired and stuff like that. But, you know, I think the big thing that people are going to expect to see, aside from the changes, is the mindset and attitude, how Klopp's maybe got into the players, you know, to lift them from this bit of a slump. I don't think it's going to be a case of saying, oh, let's get the fans behind the team tomorrow, let's help them lift them. Because I think there's going to be a lot of very depressed and sad people going into this ground tomorrow night, no matter what time it is. You know, we're going to be going in Spurs, and it's going to be in the back of people's minds, and it's going to affect their behaviour of thinking, we've been dreadful and we're playing Spurs and they're really, really, really good. And I think people are going to be concerned about what impact that will have, you know, on the team, how we start. I think that's what they're going to be particularly telling. I think if the players look like, you know, if they look like they maybe got a plan, a strategy to try and cope with Spurs and get ourselves on the front foot early doors, that might lift people. But I think bigger than the changes for me is how Klopp's maybe been able to work with these players, you know, in this bit of a gap we've had, you know, to try and make sure they're lifted and that, you know, they go out with some purpose on Saturday night.
How he's got into them is what Jay said there, John. I think that is the interesting thing, is how he's got into them, whether or not, and I suspect it's been both stick and carrot. I suspect it's been a massive slaughter, and maybe on Saturday, maybe another one on Monday morning, but then Tuesday it's back to the idea of, you know, we've got to bounce into this game.
Yeah, there was a quote from somewhere in the week saying that Klopp's told them very clearly that he won't accept what happened against Hull again. And someone tweeted me, which I thought was quite funny. He said, what did he say after Swansea? I'll only accept this once more. Which I thought was really funny. But, you know, I think he was apparently
throwing away cheap lads.
I think he tore a strip after them after the game, after the whole game, certainly at half time, wasn't happy at all. And I think managers will do that. They'll be very angry after the game, and then, you know, and then throughout the week, it'll be a case of trying to build them back up again, build up the confidence, remind them what they were good at, you know, remind them what we were doing well at earlier in the season. They need to go into the game confident, aren't we, Jay? If they're worrying too much about what Spurs can do, then
they're going to find themselves in a bit of bother, aren't
they? Yeah, because you're just not going to be able to get men forward. And we've been on our best when we've had men in the box. We've had midfield runners. We've had people ahead of whoever's been playing nominally number nine and things like that. And that's what you want to see, because that's where you're playing well. You'd sort of rather, you know, always live by the sword, die by the sword thing, than see a kind of a tepid kind of performance.
No sword.
Than a kind of tepid performance where we all look very much in a formation and you know, we'll kind of pass it around and then Spurs get a goal because they've got a lad up front who kicks it at the ball dead hard. You know, that'd be my worst kind of, you know, scenario, really. I'd rather see us get beat 3-2 and you see something about the vigour that was Liverpool.
You know what I'd love to see? You know, it was up the other day, and it's not easy to just replicate this, but I just love the idea that Liverpool just come on and go, you know what, we're just going to try and blow you away in 20 minutes here.
Yeah.
We're going to try and blow you away in the first 20 minutes and put you completely on the back foot. We might not, and I say even blown away, I'm not even talking like when we used to do it, like, you know, 3 or 4 goals up in 20 minutes like Arsenal. I'm talking like we're just going to go out and make you think, oh my God, what have we got to do? I want your midfielders going over to Pochettino after 20 minutes saying, I don't know what to do. I don't know who I'm marking. They're not playing like we thought they were going to play, lads, even when we saw that team sheet. Yeah. I want them worrying about that. I want the centre-half thinking, which runners will pick up? I want that, and I want Harry Kane moaning that he's not getting the ball off his midfield. I want them asking questions, and I think if we don't do that, you know, and we're just, and we're going to let them try and figure us out, because we're just keeping the ball and seeing what it looks like. They will grow into that better than we will, because our fans will get frustrated.
Keeping the ball and seeing what it looks like is a very good summary of how Liverpool have been playing.
Yeah,
And it tends to look rather bad.
looks last. That's a very polite description, Neil, for a tea time.
I'm well aware of the one on the radio. give me a prediction, Jay McKenna. Anything you want.
Liverpool 3-0. Want to blow them away.
John Gibbons.
Liverpool 2-1. I enjoyed Jay's more, though.
I was right behind Jay's.
no promises here. No, I'm on Twitter and that, like, this doesn't work.
Hey, McKenna.
McKenna out instead of FSG out.
Hashtag McKenna out.
I've been on board for that for years. I've got them badges.
them stickers.
stickers, sorry.
Liverpool find themselves very much needing to get a result. It is one of those games. Both Jay and John are right. Liverpool, if you're going to go down, let's at least go down swinging. It's time to swing, Reds. Podcast Network.